that I'd never heard before.
Real people, unbelievable stories, including another body.
Deepfake videos can make someone appear as though they're saying or doing something that they're not.
There is no woman in the world safe from this technology.
Beyond Utopia.
There is no freedom of religion, no freedom of thought, no freedom of press in North Korea.
And Revenge, Our Dad the Nazi Killer.
They all believe Dad was responsible for taking out a Nazi fugitive living in Australia.
Storyville. Watch on BBC iPlayer.
More contemplative comedy now from Janie Godley. This is The C-Bomb.
I think about things like, see when I die, is there a heaven? And see if I get there, can George Clooney be dead before me? But she's awfully selfish. And what if he is dead? Would it be non-consensual? Would they be like, hear you! George Clooney! Come here!
I'm Janie Godley, and as you can hear, despite being diagnosed with terminal cancer in 2021, I'm not dead yet.
You'll hear me on stage in Glasgow and chatting to my fellow comedian daughter, Ashley Story, about some pretty dark subjects, so be warned.
Let's get on with it. I'm Janie Godley, and this is The C-Bomb.
When I was a kid, I was a devoted Christian, and I remember going to Sunday school every Sunday, but I was also quite curious and talkative. Can you imagine? And I remember we used to have a preacher called Mr. Wilson. My dad used to call him the exorcist because in the pub, if he turned up at your table, your spirits disappeared. Mr. Wilson used to do the Bible stories in the manner of fuzzy felts. There'd be a big fuzzy felt board and all the fuzzy felts would tell the Bible story. But because it was quite a poor parish, they didn't have camels, they had giraffes. And it was the strangest thing to see baby Jesus, Mary and a giraffe. Mr. Wilson, why is there a giraffe? Shut up, pretend it's a camel. I was like, there's quite a lot of pretense in this story, isn't there? And then he would explain the Bible story about how Jesus was a fisher of men and he would go find these men, you know. And then I remember putting my hand up and going, Mr. Wilson, it's like, what is it now? I went, I don't know anybody called Luke or Mark. How come he's found these people in the Middle East with the names Matthew, Mark, Luke and John? That doesn't sound like Middle Eastern names. And he went, just colour in your giraffe. But I remember back in the pub, I decided to have a nativity play in the pub on Christmas night. And what I did was, I got all the customers involved in it. Everybody had to have a part in it. And we had two doors in our pub. So you came in there, you did your lines, and then you came to the bar and moved over there. So it was perfect. I had literally invented immersive theatre and didn't know it. Everybody loved it, except for the local priest and minister, who bizarrely were up in arms. Basically, the story was, Jesus's mammy, Mary, she was a Catholic, Joseph was a Protestant, they were having a baby, and then we had the three wise men who were three drug addicts from the Gorbals. And it kind of made sense in the story that they were saved when they saw the baby Jesus. And the priest and the minister went mad. They said, this is terrible. I went, what other pub in the East End of Glasgow is writing and thinking and speaking about the baby Jesus in Christmas night? And it had lent to all the absolute theories of the story and the love and the forgiveness and the hopefulness of it. And we had a narrator as well, and we had a dancer dancing to Like a Virgin. It was brilliant.
You were looking at lots of videos from the olden days when you worked in the pub.
Yes. They're making this beautiful, moving documentary film about me.
Yeah.
It's called Janie.
Mm.
And I have been so touched. I watched it. It's just, and you're in it, and it's so lovely. And it covers all the early years, the pub years, the early comedy years, right up until the cancer and the chemotherapy and me going through treatment and watching me win the award and all of that.
Was that sad to look back, or was it happy? What was it?
It was happy to look back. I cannot believe
that you were stood behind the bar that many times actually pouring pints. I mean, how highly illegal was that? And then if you weren't doing that, you were teaching all the local gangsters how to do Saturday night, and there was a song and it had a special dance.
Yeah, Saturday Night Wigfield.
Yes, and you had them all in a line doing Wigfield and you were dead annoyed because they were getting slightly out of line.
Yeah.
And we should have known that you had autism then.
There's literally videos of me. It was like Ashley doing her favourite thing and it's me just repeatedly wiping tiny bottles of orange until they're perfectly shiny.
Watching you run about the pub was so funny. And there's one scene where all the pub's really busy, there's a lot of folk in it, and then it pans, and then there's a six-year-old girl standing with a microphone doing what can only be described as a comedy act.
Who's the six-year-old girl?
You?
Oh, no!
Yes! You were doing, oh, look, there's Tommy. Do you remember you, Tommy? This is Tommy who's got a taxi, but my dad says he doesn't pay tax, and that's why it's called a tax taxi or some really weird tax-related joke you made about a taxi driver. And you're standing there in a wee pair of short dungarees, which is so funny, and you're telling jokes, and you're past remarking as people go by. You go, that's Margaret. She used to be a window cleaner, but then she couldn't get a good buff gone. And you didn't know they were really inappropriate jokes you were telling.
Oh, I knew. It's one of my earliest ever memories is somebody in the pub eating a sausage and going, that's the shape of a penis, and everybody laughing and going, oh, if I point out things look like dirty things, that gets a laugh.
The best one ever, which I nearly fainted, I laughed that much, was I took you into the sauna and the moat house and there was like seven men in it. You said, I can smell sausages cooking.
How old was I?
Five.
Oh!
Just a wee five-year-old and a wee Minnie Mouse swimming costume. Remember you asked the priest if he could really, really see God and frighten the priest? What you actually said was, does he go to the bingo? And the priest went, I don't know, because you said, because then he would know the numbers that were coming up. It's like,
why is she talking about the bingo? We've never even been to bingo.
No, but Daddy used to run bingo in the pub and my favourite thing was to use the baby monitor, which was a very valid form of childcare, Jenny.
Yeah.
A baby monitor from a flat to a pub worked a treat. And I remember I would listen, again, with my autism ears, for Dad reading out the numbers. And then when he would get to a certain point, I'd go, house, really and quietly.
The whole pub would be turned out, people looking for house, called house.
In my head, in my tiny world, I was sure that God must be very interested in bingo because everybody else I knew was hyper fixated on bingo.
We look back and go, what kind of woman was I? I was a cheeky woman. I was very loud and angry and quite confrontational. But I do remember the difference with us being mothers and our mothers because a skull sandal ruled the house. I was in the Waitrose. I was just using the toilet. I don't always buy their stuff. I saw a child in a wax jacket and a pair of cherry red cords. Yeah, he was five. He looked like a car salesman. And he kicked his mammy. He kicked her. His mammy went, stop it, Marcus. You're making mummy unhappy. And she saw me watching. We made eye contact. And she went, he's tired. I says, I'll put him to sleep if you want. Imagine that was us. Back in the 60s, imagine me walking down the road with my mammy talking to her pal, and me kicking her, going, move it, I'm hungry. Do you know what would happen? I'd still be in a coma. She'd take half a sandal and beat you clean to death. My mammy never had a menopause. She just stood near a window and shouted at everybody. Getting a bit of cool, but we had to go over to get hit by her because she couldn't leave the window. She's like, come out here, I hit you. Women back then didn't get help for the doctors.
If you had a problem back then in the 60s, you know, maybe you weren't wearing enough underskirts or something, or you weren't treating your man well enough, you would get sent to the doctor and they just gave you nerve tablets and Valium, and they just sedated women to shut them up. Because God forbid women had an opinion and went out in a pair of hot pants in the summer. It was a weird old time. I mean, the thing is you can't hit your kids back, especially in Scotland, but you can smack them lightly in England, so are on a bus to Carlisle.
I was so neglectful as a mother at times.
Don't say neglectful. In your head, and I understand that your upbringing had been so neglectful, where you had literally had lice in your hair, clothes that didn't fit, a hungry belly, mm-hmm. and unclean, and nobody at all caring for you. Mm. I had food, I had clothes, I had clean hair and clean pants and a clean bed. Mm-hmm. And by your standards,
that was
you
enough.
Had overreached beyond what your upbringing was. So the level of neglect you had was more of a social neglect. And it must have been easy for you to do it to me, mm-hmm. because I was a super easy child to be left by herself.
Yeah.
I was very content on my own. I was very well behaved. You told me a rule. I stuck to the rule because I was an undiagnosed autistic 5-year-old.
You never touched anything you weren't allowed to.
I never touched anything I wasn't allowed to. I never broke any rules. I never broke things. I never was rambunctious or bad. I was well behaved and I was quiet. So it must have been incredibly easy for you and my dad to go, she's fine, just leave her.
The time the police came to the door and you wouldn't let them in, and I was snoring on the couch, and the police pressed the buzzer. They threatened you. They said, if you don't let me in, you're going to prison. So she let the police in, and the police came to the door, and what they were doing is they were chasing young boys who'd stole hubcaps. I mean, seriously, the east end of Glasgow, but hubcaps
plain
was the problem.
Plainclothes police officers?
Yep.
Detectives?
As soon as they opened the door, I said, did one of you threaten my child? And they went, no. And she pushed her way through all the legs and went, yes, you did. You said on that monitor, if you do not let me in, I'm going to put you in prison. Don't you dare call me a liar. I was going to grow up and be a police lady, but because of you, I shall never put a uniform on. Now I'm going to tell my dad and you're going to be in trouble.
I wanted to be a policewoman so badly because of the bill. I wanted to work in Sun Hill and patrol the Jasmine Allen estate. But that day changed. He dangled a man out of a window.
Yeah, he did. I ran up the close and the policeman was dangling a young guy out the window to make him admit that he had stolen something.
Stole a hubcap.
I says, what are you doing? He went, if he broke into your house, you'd be upset. When if he broke into my house, I'd probably shoot him, but I'm not a police officer. So stop doing that right now.
Do you remember when a man broke in our house and you hit him over the head with a Celtic bottle of vodka?
Yeah, I did. I chased him for 5 miles before I did it. I chased him, and it was funny because he left a towel that said, it was a Liverpool football towel, that says you'll never walk alone, and I thought, you'll never walk again. I was so angry.
I think it's really funny how you and Dad never let go of that kind of East End response to danger. Mm. Like, even Dad in his dotage, do you remember that man came up to her close and tried to steal my shoes? Mm-hmm. And Dad chased him with my yoga stick.
Yeah.
With the elastic buttons coming off the end.
Yeah, yeah. We still have that thing. We still have, but we should have been more conscious of you as a child. But you were dead easy.
I understand it because it was so. I was so easy to just be left by myself. So I don't. It's not like I was desperately calling out for attention and affection, and you were ignoring it.
No,
I was pretty content to be left on my own.
And you were dead smart. You're better at being in your own than us.
And then you just. Then it just. I mean, I didn't know that. I had to tell yous.
Yeah.
No. It was 5.
I don't know why people have more than one kid. I never caught my hand in a car door twice. When I was young and I had Ashley on the Saturday and I went back to work on the Monday because we were self-employed, we had a pub. It was just different times. We didn't have the pressure where we had to go out running with a 3-wheeled pram through Kelvin Grove Park so we can snap back, as they call it. Snap back. You have to look thin really, really quickly when you have a baby now. The man can get really fat, but the woman, she has to snap back. And I think they're referring to her innards more than her outwards. In my day, the body pressure was different. We had magazines that says how to test for the perfect breasts. You put a pencil under your boob, and if it falls out, you have the perfect breasts. I could get a 3-bar electric fire, a litre bottle of iron brew, and a soda stream under my tits.
I spent so much time in the 80s where we men behind, you know, when I was behind the bar telling me I was fat and ugly. And by the way, back then there was 3 levels of underskirts in big stores.
Mm.
Everybody had to wear an underskirt because if you saw through it, then it was your own fault if anything bad happened to you. So I had all these terrible body issues where my body just wasn't right. It was either too fat or too thin, or my boobs were too big. And then I got to a place where I was quite all right with how it was looking. And then I got cancer, and now I've got a big hernia, which is like a bag of salad potatoes kicking through Venetian blinds. And then all my hair fell out. But by the way, I can still grow a black moustache. Sure, that's handy. And how did you feel when you saw me completely bald after being... Because we are both big, hairy women.
You say to me all the time, oh, I don't look the same, I don't look the same, but you just, you look exactly the same. Having short hair or long hair or a hernia or no hernia, you don't look any different to me. I don't know what it is.
And, no, your dad said
that as well.
And I
feel like you get vexed at me, like I'm lying.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm mad autistic, and you know I'd say straight away. And I'd be like, no, you look like a Teletubby, back to your room, Paul. You know I'd say.
I said to your dad, tell me I look sexy and attractive. And he said, you look okay. I went, no, that's not the words I told you to say, Mr. Autistic. Say I'm sexy and I look attractive. And he went, I think you look nice.
Aww. So
he is changing his dialogue. He said to the nicest thing today, when I went into the hospital for my treatment, I went, I absolutely hate this. I hate getting treatment. I hate everything about this. You just get moments, and people listening who know people with cancer, you just have moments when you're like, I'm done with this.
I'm going to say right now, but that's most of your moments. You've not had the graceful, I'm coping well with this era yet.
No, we will get to that.
I'm really hoping so.
That'll happen.
Uh-huh.
And your dad said to me the day, I'm really glad that you're here and you're getting treatment because it's so worthwhile. It means I get to spend more time with you. And I looked at him and I thought, you've read a pamphlet somewhere.
He's read a pamphlet.
But my husband has mellowed. I mean, it's been difficult with him for years and years with the autism. He said these tantrums that we can't control, and, you know, everywhere we go, every holiday was just a fight in another country. And we're trying not to do that. We're trying to, you know, make things feel better and trying to enjoy our time better. You know, there's some memories of his social awkwardness. Things like we'd be having a meeting and he'd be like, do you like boiled beef out the blue? We're like, why? And he knows they can't fix the past. He knows that he's done so wrong, and he knows that I'm dying. So now he's trying to make it all up, but getting it all wrong. So he's decided in a rule for to stop me from bringing up the past. He's now got this rule called tax rules. So you can only keep the receipts for 6 years. And it's obvious with his autism that he can't cope, because I remember saying, oh, I remember a way back in 1986, you called me fat and you said I was ugly. He went, no, I never. I went, that's the worst thing you could ever say to me. He went, is it? I went, yeah. He went, I thought telling you that I'd killed Ashley and I don't know where I bury her is the worst thing. I went, you're right. But I wasn't factoring in killing children. I was just saying you called me fat. He went, but you were a bit fat. I was like, right. Tax rules.
Explain your tax rule to the listeners, because they don't abide by it, but explain it.
It means that after 5 years, or is it 6 years?
It's 7 years.
7 years, you can throw out the receipts and you don't have to keep them. So whenever I dig Sean up about something, my husband up about something, he'll shout, oh no, we're only allowed to go tax rules, go back 7 years. You tell me why that's wrong.
It's not wrong, you just don't do that.
Nobody would.
You'll be watching telly. Something completely unrelated. You'll be watching some True Detective, and then you'll turn around and you'll be like, 1987, you said that I looked like a fat letterbox. And he's just like, what?
Yeah, he can't remember. Do you remember that time you slammed the door and I couldn't get out the car and you called me stupid because I couldn't work the arm of a car and the car door and it was my own fault? When was that? 1982.
Uh-huh.
Was that the day Diana get married? Yes!
Yeah, I'll just snap and then that's when and we end up in separate rooms.
And then I have to come in and do my happy, let's not be angry anymore. It's Ashley! Hey, you want to hear a joke about sausages?
But his autism is just fascinating. These are some of the things he hates. Loud, sudden noises, velvet. It's a fabric that moves. Courgettes, aubergines, lemon-flavoured cakes. Okay, let me address the lemon thing. I only like lemon things if they're savoury, but not if they're sweet. He says that often in restaurants. I don't like lemon sweet, just lemon savoury. And then that tone of voice, I'm like, oh, sexy. He also hates people being factually incorrect. He will correct you. He hates reality shows about talentless people. People who don't pick up litter, he will stop them in the street. Large cutlery, give me a small fork. Square plates, that's the devil's work. Comedy oversized glasses, why would you? Speaking to people, hates that. People who cycle through the traffic lights, ooh. And his big pet hate, audio libraries that release part 5 of a series of 10 and not the previous 4 books, kept me up one whole night telling me about that, to the point where I had to contact Val McDermid and ask her to send me the other audio books that day. These are the things he loves. Black pens. Has to be written in a black pen. I'm like, oh, brilliant. Lists. Loves a list. Opera. Oh, this man loves opera. Poetry. Don't ask me why. Roman history. I have been awake many nights listening to, oh, my God, who's your favourite Roman emperor? He's also obsessed with the Plantagenets. Yeah, we know. Audiobooks, history books, collections of elastic bands. He has 276 elastic bands. He counts them. I snap them. Soft fabrics, warm coffee cakes, mint tea, babies, doing anything with numbers, but weirdly not a 69. Driving, photography, small cutlery and china cups. And his favourite new obsession is blending his own tea. And he spends so long on this and he talks about it a lot. And then he gives it to me and I can't taste it because I've had chemotherapy. So I'm like, yeah, that's lovely. No idea. Unless it tastes a curry, I'll never taste it because I can't taste anything. So husband wants to buy new things. This is his new obsession, is buying things. He's bought new bed linen. We have 27 duvet sets. I'm having to give 20 to the charity shop. He's bought 2 more. His other thing is he's bought a new car. The new car is really, really bothering him because he had to get a new car because the old car is dying. Now, the old car is just an allegory for me, but he can't understand that because he's autism. So every time he goes into the dealership to see the guys, like, hey! Hey there, Mr. Story, you getting a new car? And he wants to cry. Your old car will crush it. He's like, please don't. Please don't. He doesn't get excited about the new car coming. He's more sad about the old car going. And I keep trying to tell the car dealership men, you don't understand. I've got cancer and he thinks the old car is me. They're like, we don't know. Anyway, what about your new car? Do you want to pay for the paint? Again, no, I'm going to colour it in with Sharpies.
You and Dad are why I'll never have a relationship, mm-hmm. ever. No disrespect to you, but it's awful.
I agree. And maybe this is very selfish, and maybe I'm like a covert narcissist or something, but just see having to deal with other people's...
foibles.
Just not even foibles, just everything. What do you want to eat for dinner? I hate having to ask you is, mm-hmm. what do you want me to cook for you?
No.
I just want to eat what I want to eat.
No, and your daddy's autism isn't helpful because he'll say, do you want fish, chicken or beef? And I'll go beef and he'll go, what about fish? Yeah. And then I just genuinely want to stick a fork in his head.
And then you, when you're undiagnosed ADHD, yeah. we'll just snap.
I think that we do have a really toxic relationship. We
just
do.
Red flags.
Oh, Ashley, honestly, if it wasn't the fact that I was averse to admin, I'd have divorced them ages ago.
I know that, and
I hate paperwork.
It's the worst part of it.
But here's the difference. Since I've had cancer, he's turned out to be all right. I quite like him now. It's only taken since 1980.
Oh, no. It makes me so anxious. I get that yous are codependent.
Yeah.
And yous both had terribly traumatic childhoods.
Yeah.
Which resulted in a trauma bond of two people who are so different and have nothing in common, but who have just stuck together through the sheer will and determination to not end up like their parents.
Yeah.
And have by proxy ended up like weird Frankenstein monsters in terms of a relationship.
Yeah.
It's just, you have put that many bolts in your neck just to cope with whatever the other person's doing, that you're just very weird. But then I look at everybody else's mum and dads and I'm like, oh yeah, none of yous like each other. Yous just needed to get a mortgage and it was easier as a pair.
And people say to me, have you found religion since you've had your disease? And I think that that would be really horrible to do that, just like you live your whole life going, nah, not into your Jesus. I've got cancer, suddenly I'm Jesus. And even Jesus would be like, where have you been? Oh, now you need me. I think when I die, if I do meet Jesus, he's going to go, do you know what, Janie? The swearing. And I'll be like, but you created me and you said that I could use free will, and I think they're only words, is swearing worse? And then he go, I'm sorry to interrupt you, Hitler's just arrived. I'm like, how's he getting in? And he's like, he plays the accordion. Myra Hindley on a tambourine. I'm like, I'm not understanding any of this, Jesus. Is George Clooney here? What's that earl there? He went, a giraffe. I have met George Clooney. I was at the BAFTA Awards many years ago, and I was in a beautiful big hotel in Park Lane, and it had a big, beautiful Victorian staircase. And I remember I was going to speak to George Clooney about the film Good Luck and Good Night. And I had on this evening dress that kind of came here and then I went all the way down. And just as I spoke to him, I went on my knees and fell down the first two stairs. And as I did that, my dress went right under my legs. And then I went down all the stairs on my knees. And as I did, the dress got pulled further and further down. And all you could see was my good bra and my boobs and George Clooney walking beside me. And I turned to him and I went, is everybody looking at me? And he said, no, they're staring at me. Thank you very much, everybody. I hope you had a good night. And if you did, please go online and tell everybody. If you didn't, keep it a secret. Nobody likes a grass. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been amazing tonight. Thank you so much. I've been Janie Godley. Tune in next week and you'll hear more stories.
The C-Bomb was written by Janie Godley. It featured Ashley Story and was produced by Julia Sutherland at Dabster Productions for Radio 4. Tonight's Front Row is celebrating the season of the March Hare by discussing how the emblem of the hare is used in art, music and mythology. That's at 7:15. Before that, we're heading to Ambridge. That's after the news.
It's 40 years since the Terminator travelled back in time to become an instant movie classic.
Not just a machine, he's a machine covered with flesh.
But did this science fiction film also predict the future?
We're beginning to see autonomous and semi-autonomous machines on the battlefield.
I'm Beth Singler, an anthropologist specialising in artificial intelligence. Now for Radio 4, I'll be exploring the Terminator's legacy and how it shaped our view on AI.
This is science fiction about a future that we should be aware of. because it's not one that any of us really wants.
I'll be back, 40 Years of the Terminator, on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds. Next Tuesday.